Hey folks, and welcome to another episode of the Mountain Bikes Apart podcast. This is a show where we talk about anything mountain biking, from trail guides, equipment, clothes, anything to do with mountain biking, we'll talk about it and hopefully get it all over to you so that you can make your way through the mountain biking world, get out there on the bike as much as possible. I'm Colin Gray, as always, and I'm joined by Tom Bell. Hey Tom.
Hi Colin, how's things with you?
Very well, thanks. Very well. You've been out on the bike recently?
Yeah, I was out this morning actually, just a nice easy spin. Had a bit of a hard day yesterday training wise.
Really?
With a bit of a split day, so one in the morning, one in the evening. So just taking some time to work on the mountain bike skills, but not kind of, you know, push it, getting the heart rate up. So just keeping it nice and easy today.
Okay, why do you do a split day rather than a normal day? What's the difference?
Well, it's really, I kind of split my training into out and out training days and then recovery days, just so I'm very clear on what the kind of goal is for the day. And sometimes that training ride will be an endurance ride, so that'll typically be a longer ride, but that would be just one ride that day. So Sometimes when I'm doing really intense stuff, I'll try, obviously those rides want to be a little on the shorter side, but I still kind of want that volume there. So I'll do maybe a 2-hour ride with some intervals in the morning, and then either a 2-hour or slightly shorter ride in the afternoon, maybe on the mountain bike, just to get that, you know, 4-hour plus volume in, but it's not all in one kind of block, is the thinking.
Okay. So you do different types of stuff in each one though, so it's kind of to get a bit, variable training, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. So the morning one ride will typically be on the road bike, just because it's a bit more consistent on the road when you're kind of looking at power and that kind of thing. Yeah. And then the second one will be to usually on a different kind of bike, doing something a little bit different. So mountain bikes, stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, some of the bike skills itself.
Exactly.
Cool. Have you got any, I can't remember what you said last time I talked to you now, any races coming up soon?
Yeah, I've got, I'm just putting the final sort of logistical plans together for the last World Cup in Andorra.
Ah, okay.
So that should be pretty cool. Yeah. It looks like a really nice, it's at Val Nord Bike Park, which is obviously a ski center in the winter, and then a really cross-country and downhill kind of orientated bike park.
Right.
Right in the middle of Andorra, so that would be pretty nice. And then more recently than that, or sooner than that, I've got the marathon national championships.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To contest. So.
And your last marathon one didn't go too well, did it? So hoping this one will go a bit better.
That's it, exactly. That was the world championships as well, which is a bit of a bummer. But hopefully, I can make up for it a bit with the national championships a bit closer to home.
Yeah, perfect. Good stuff. Yeah. Well, all I'm training for just now is the Relentless 24, which is our 24-hour race up in Fort William, which is in October. So it's a wee while away yet. But my brother's got it in his head that he actually wants to do very well this year. So
taking it quite seriously.
Yeah, he's a much more prolific competitor than I do. He does like proper Ironman races.
Okay.
And he's a big triathlete. So he doesn't do a whole lot of mountain biking, but he's hell of a fit. So
got that endurance there by the sound of
exactly, it. Exactly, yeah. So he wanted to do something which wasn't quite 24 hours. That was a bit outside his training plan, but he wanted to do like 18 or so hours in a day, something pretty high endurance. So the agreement is that I'm going to do maybe about a third of it and he'll do two thirds. So I'm maybe going to do about 8 hours of the 24, I think.
That sounds
still be a good chunk.
That's a big chunk of time for sure.
He's trying to convince me to do the overnight hours, which is a bit unfair, but
I guess you've got to balance the less time that you're going to be doing maybe with something. Maybe that's maybe that's the way to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see. But anyway, so for this episode, like we talked about, we're going to do our Q&A stuff.
Yeah.
Delighted with how many questions we've had in. So if you've been there out there and sent in a question, then thank you very much for sending it in. We've had quite a few, so we're not going to be able to, I don't think we're going to get through them all in the next two episodes. The plan is to do this episode and next to finish up this season two on on biking equipment, on setting up your bikes. We're going to do two episodes to finish up this season and answer a good few questions, probably something like 8 or 9. In fact, it's 8 or 9 people, but there's a few people taking liberties and asking a bunch of questions and one. So, but it's great. So we're going to go through these and save a few of them for the next season as well. So we'll just kind of try and distribute them through the coming episodes too. So when we come back to season 3, we'll have, I think we'll try and do questions on every single episode, try and get a bit of listener feedback in there and do a bit of Q&A every single time. So some bulk episodes now, this one and next one, answer a bunch of them and then spread them out over the rest. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. That sounds really, I really like the idea of having some questions in you know, the next season's episode. So yeah, that should be good.
Yeah, a bit more variety. We'll try and talk exactly a bit less and get more people on.
That's it.
Okay, right, let's start off. Right, so we've got, this is an older one actually, a chap called Neil Turner, who's been in touch a few times actually, and he had a few good questions. He's from Peebles, so local to me, not too far away. It's quite a good variety actually. It's been quite cool seeing where some of the listeners are from. So there's a bunch of countries we'll go through over the next couple of episodes and the questions. But this is Neil from Peebles, which is one of the top mountain biking destinations in the UK. You've got Glentresnor and Leithen, and some great trails down there. So this is what Neil says. He says, any tips? So starts out with the question straight away. Any tips on selecting the right gears of your needs? Because I'd say I've recently bought a 1x10 and I'm struggling with the lower gear when a climb gets too steep. I could go for a 1x11 at some stage or get a cassette, a 42T converter for the current 1x10 setup to give me a better range, but I've no idea what this would feel like. Any tips on how to calculate a ratio, then compare that to the gearing ratio on the bike you already have? For example, his old hardtail with 3 rings. That's going into our next question. So we'll go through this one first, then I'll go into his future ones. So basically it's about, if I'm right in thinking, this is him talking about just going one ring up the front, 10 at the back, and the different options. I've no idea what a 42T converter is. Do you know what that is?
I think it's just a little device that just converts a regular, I think it's either converts the cassette or converts an existing, it converts the hub or an existing cassette by just putting an extra kind of ring on there. So the extra kind of large cog right at the back.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you can get an extra one on there.
Exactly, yeah. So it takes you above, which would, exactly.
Okay, so he says he's struggling with the lower gear. So basically not getting enough, an easy enough gear when it gets too steep.
Yeah.
Have you ever run a single front? We talked about this a while back, but I can't remember what you said now.
Yeah, I actually run single rings exclusively. I'm being a racer and kind of having a bike set up mainly for that. I always run a 1x11 system,
cool,
which I think does go up to 42. I think that's what it is at the back. There's some monster cassettes on the market now with the new SRAM Eagle, which actually goes up to 50 teeth at the back. So it's a bit like a dinner plate sort of strapped to your rear wheel there. But I know in the past when I was sort of transitioning from more of a two and a three ring setup at the front with a 10 speed at the back, that I also found it was quite limiting having a single ring at the front with a 10 speed at the back, just because that kind of sits in the kind of middle of the range that you'd find on a kind of regular three or two ring mountain bike. Sure. So you don't have that big gear kind of at the bottom where you can ride on the road and get up to kind of high speeds and still pedal. But then when it gets really, really steep, you don't have a small enough gear, I guess, to pedal at a nice cadence. So it's definitely a tricky one. There's kind of two ways to approach it. I guess you could make the front ring smaller. So if you've got, say, a 34 tooth chain ring on the front as using the single ring, you could take that to a 32 or a 30 even, which is pretty small, but that would give you a smaller gear for the really tough stuff. Mm-hmm. Or as As the listener said, you can then up the range at the back. So you could go for a bigger cassette, maybe a bigger 10-speed block or an 11-speed system.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You just add an extra one at the back, get the 11 on there, and that makes sort it out. But
yeah.
he's asking as well about how to calculate the ratio. Like, is there... I've seen these online before, like gear ratio calculators, so you can try and compare them. Is there an easy way to do it, or is it about getting a calculator out and knowing the formula for comparing? So say he mentions his old hardtail with the three rings.
Yeah.
Can you figure out exactly what, you know, front teeth versus back teeth to compare that to, you know, the existing ones?
Yeah. I would say the best bet is to probably go for a kind of online calculation. I'm not sure if I've ever used one. I might have done a little while ago, but I certainly don't know the formula. Formula off the top of my head. So maybe an online tool. Yeah. There's a few good ones out there.
Yeah, we'll try and link to one in the show notes to answer this, Neil. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a few good tools online you can look at. You can basically type in what your gearing is. So you'll be able to put in your three rings at the front, your one at the back, the size of it, and find out how to replicate that, you know, that small ring, you know, that lowest gear that you want. Yeah. So I guess it's, he's saying it's his old hardtail, so he might have got rid of his old hardtail. But I think a good way to go about it might be like if you had somebody else's three ring hardtail to compare it to, get on there, find out, you know, go for a ride, or if you've got one yourself, go on it and figure out what the ratios are that you want, like which rings you're in when you're comfortable on, you know, the steepest you tend to ride.
Exactly.
And then you could find out using the calculator what the ratio is there. And then, you know, yeah, that might give you an idea of what you need in the front. Like you're saying, Tom, you could lower the size of that front ring and you'd know what tooth number you'd need or what diameter you'd need, basically, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah, I was gonna suggest as well, if you haven't got any willing friends to lend a hardtail, then maybe a demo day at one of the local shops would be a good chance just to jump on a few different bikes and see what might be the most convenient way, I guess, to change from what he's already running to a new system, because it's all right switching from a 10 speed to an 11 speed, but to be honest, there's lots of components that actually need to change with that. So you need an 11 speed chain and an 11 speed cassette, 11 speed shifter, and probably some other stuff as well. So
So actually the front ring's an easier fix in that case, isn't it?
It is. It's an easier fix for the easier gears, but then obviously at the other end it compromises how much kind of how big the gear can go. So if you're doing some, you know, riding on the road or some kind of fire roady kind of trail, sometimes you can find that you can spin them out a little bit too easily. So it's about, I guess, figuring out what sort of riding you do and then applying the best fix.
Because it's always going to be a compromise, isn't it? You're cutting down to one ring versus three, so you're never going to get the same range. So yeah, it's just what's the best option in there for you, like, say,
exactly. Yeah, that's it. I run a 34 tooth ring at the front and then a 1142 at the back. And that's pretty much fine for me off-road. But then on the road, sometimes you have to just kind of freewheel down some hills. But to be honest, if you're not kind of training all the time and being like me and watching all the numbers, it's not a problem, just a freewheel a little bit.
Yeah.
So shouldn't be too much of a worry.
Yeah, cool. I think that'll be useful knowing the exact setup you use, actually. Might give him a good reference.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Right, his second part of the question from Neil here, again, taking liberties, Neil, but we'll let you off. Unsure if you covered this during the most recent series, but an idiot's guide to setting up suspension would be good. So actually, this isn't someone we'll have to cover here because we can't really go through the whole setup of suspension, but actually that's something we mentioned in the past. I can't remember whether it was on the show or off, but I'd love to get a suspension expert on, because I mean, suspension is one of those things which is that's the one bit of the bike that actually I don't service myself. It's the one bit I've not ventured into taking apart my oil or air or any kind of suspension. It's just it's complex.
I'm with you there. Me too. I've got I think we have discussed it in the past, and I'm going to hopefully get Matt Clark, who runs Plush Suspension, who are a sponsor of mine. He services all of my Fox Forks, and he's worked for SRAM for a long time as well in the past. So he's the man to speak to about suspension setup. So I'm definitely going to get Matt on the podcast at some point soon.
Brilliant. Yeah, I remember that now, actually. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, definitely get that one for early next season, because I think that's something a few people have asked about, so I think it'd be good to cover.
Cool.
So he finishes up, just a suggestion for future episodes, actually a show on iconic events would be good. Yeah, for example, Crankworx, Mega Avalanche, EWS, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You could always do one and report back. So fancy doing Mega Avalanche, Tom?
I wouldn't mind doing it. I've had a friend that's done it ages ago.
Really?
And I obviously watched a load of the videos of it as well, and it looks pretty insane.
Yeah,
I've got to be honest.
Mental.
Yeah.
I would love to try it as well, actually, but I suspect I'd be way at the back of the field on that one. Not a full-on downhiller.
No, me neither. It would definitely just be about getting down to the finish as opposed to a result.
Yeah, could definitely cover more of that. It'd be good to do a few episodes, though, on different types of events. So, I mean, Crankworx and Mega Avalanche are more downhilly events, but then you've got pretty big cross-country events like enduros, free ride, all that kind of stuff. So I could definitely report on quite a lot of the more endurance stuff around Scotland. I'm sure you could as well, around Europe as well. So yeah, we should think about that. We'll add that in.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Cool. All right, thanks, Neil. I hope that helped you with the gearing problems. Definitely, if you do anything around that, if you find a solution yourself, if it's complete nonsense what we were talking about and you figured out a better solution yourself, then report back, and be good to get you on the show as well, actually. If you send us a voice comment, or even we could call you in on Skype or something like that. So get in touch again and let me know what you think. It'd be good to hear your feedback. So next one, let's go on to Nolan Taylor. So we've got Nolan Taylor from Montana in the US, and he had a couple of different things to ask about. So first things first, now he asked about, now this is something we covered a little bit, but he asked a minimum bike repair kit for a couple of our crews on the trail as well as for an overnight backpacking trip. I think we covered this pretty well, actually, on the bike bag, what's in your bag episode.
We talked quite a lot about tools, I guess, that would go in there. So
quick summary, though, wasn't it? It's basically you've got your multi-tool, you've got your pump, you've got your spare tube, repair kit, in terms of you'll take away your repair kit for your tubes as well in case you run out of spare tubes. And that's the kind of couple of hour cruise, isn't it? I don't really take anything more than that. Maybe, we talked about like a power link. So maybe a wee power link just in case your chain snaps or something like that. And the possibility of having a chain tool on your multi-tool. And the fact that I sometimes take out a big chain tool just because it's not that big. It doesn't weigh very much, just in case.
And it actually works.
Yeah, exactly. And what was it? What were the extras we talked about for the bike pack? So overnight, a couple of extras we would throw in.
Yeah, I think you mentioned, Colin, that you had in a group of guys had actually a spare rear mech a few little kind of components just in case, you know, those got kind of snapped off. Certainly a mech hanger is a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
It's because that's the thing that's designed to go in case of, you know, something snagging the rear mech. Definitely, just exactly what you mentioned before is going to be good as well for a longer ride. And then I've heard of people just taking kind of adjustable wrenches and stuff like that, just because they can get you out of quite a few different situations if mishaps occur.
Yeah, or a Leatherman, just like a Leatherman that's got a good few little tools on it.
Feature packed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes all you need is a set of pliers to pull through a cable or something like that, and that saves you, doesn't it?
Yeah, we mentioned, I think, as well, perhaps some sort of duct tape or ties and things for just attaching, you know, if a brake lever snaps off and that kind of thing.
Perfect. Yeah, cool. Okay, so yeah, we won't go into that too much because we covered it pretty well, I think. So go back to the What's in Your Bag episode, which is just a few weeks back. You'll find that there. So going on to his other questions, Nolan also asked a question about technique, which is something I think we need to do a whole episode on. We can't really do justice to this, I think, in a quick Q&A. So yeah, just asked about technique for a newbie, mostly climbing and maintaining speed on a transition from downhill to uphill.
Yeah.
Maybe actually, I mean, climbing, probably got a few tips on, you know, technique for climbing. I mean, what do you think? Like a steep hill, going from sort of average steep up to very steep. What are you thinking as you're just trying to gain traction, keep power as you're going up there?
Yeah, I think in terms of gaining or maintaining traction, it's definitely comes down to having your weight in the right place, but then also having a smooth cadence and smooth pedal stroke where you're just trying to make it as circular as possible, because it's when the pedal stroke gets quite choppy and there's some what they call dead spots in the pedal revolution that can cause the rear tire to lose grip. So I think shifting the weight forward so the front wheel isn't kind of lifting up, especially when it gets really steep, but also maintaining weight on the rear wheel. So the kind of key advice is just to put the nose of the saddle, or sort of perch right on the nose of the saddle, just so you're keeping that weight back, but also your upper body's quite over the handlebars, and then just maintaining a fairly high cadence, but one that's smooth as well. So yeah, the wheel's not kind of skidding all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, the place where a lot of people fall down is that as soon as it gets steep, you stand up, don't you? And then you're sort of mashing down on the pedals on the downstroke, and that's about it. And that's, yeah, like you say, that's when, you know, the back wheel just spins out because you're putting a whole lot of pressure just on that one quarter of the pedal stroke.
Yeah.
It's something I'm really prone to as well. I know it's something I've worked on a lot, is exactly what you said there about, you know, you think that you need to go over the front of the bike because you're going to tip backwards on a steep hill.
Yep.
But as soon as you do that, then yeah, there's no weight on the back wheel and therefore you totally lose traction too. So it's about, yeah, try to stay in the middle. It's one of those balancing acts, isn't it?
Just
try to keep, stop yourself toppling over, but try and stay as back as you can.
Yeah, basically that. And sometimes you do have to kind of shift that weight a little bit, almost as if you were doing a kind of, wheelie or anything like that, where you have to kind of, sometimes you have to shift your weight a little bit, forward just to pick the wheel up over something or to stop the front when it goes over,
yeah,
you know, a little pitch up, but also then sometimes shift backwards as well. So sometimes you are rocking a little bit sort of back and forth, but generally speaking, exactly, it's all about balancing that weight on the rear wheel versus weight over the handlebars.
Yeah, yeah. And try not to throw up when it gets too steep.
And try not to die on the way up.
There's a hill at Glentress. Have you been around the Black Run at Glentress?
I have, yeah, quite a few times actually, but it's been a few years, so it's not fresh in my mind, but.
There's the one, you'll maybe know it because it's infamous. You're going around the Black Run and it's where you turn off. So anybody listening, basically Glentress, you climb a good bit of Fire Road,
yeah,
and then it splits off Red and Black. And if you take the Black route, you're straight onto, as soon as you go onto the Black's only route, you're onto a really nice little sort of flowy climb through the forest. Quite rocky, quite rough, but really good fun because it's not that steep. And so you kind of go through and you're having fun and you're going quite fast. And then you spin around a corner at one point and you're just like thrown onto this straight up, like there's no fanning about. It's basically just right, we're not going to try and, you know, find our way through the forest here. We're just cutting a swathe through the trees and we're going to go straight up this 40-50 degree slope. It's ridiculous. And it's just horrible. And it's long as well.
Yeah.
And it's one of those hills that's on the verge of being nearly, like, certainly in the early days, like when I was first getting into riding, it was a slope. It's one of those slopes that actually you can't do. You don't have the power in the legs in the first place, mm-hmm, and then even once you get the power in the legs, it's that steep that you need a lot of technique. It's just like you're saying there, that balance, that really tricky balance between keeping traction but not falling backwards, and it's,
yeah,
you would just always spin out.
Yeah.
And it's good actually, it's a challenge. So you've got this little game where you're trying not to spin out and trying to keep going, and there's like three or four you can up it, but at the top of that, it's just, like when I'm up there with three or four pals, we just like all of us just topple off our bikes and just lie there, chest heaving. It's horrible. Do you know the one I mean? Or
I think I do. Yeah, yeah. I seem to remember. I seem to remember a few tough climbs there, but I'm pretty sure that one was quite a surprise on the first go round. Yeah,
it's generally memorable just for the fact that most mountain bike trails have horrible climbs, but most of them are like a standard mountain bike trail where it's kind of finding a way, you know, following the contours.
And yeah,
that's kind of the way mountain bike trails usually go. You're finding your way through the way that you would normally walk up, but this just, it's just like, yeah, we're not messing about, we're going straight up. But yeah, you'll need that technique there.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, good question, Nolan. We'll go through, I think we're going to have to do a few episodes next season on technique, because that's something we've not done so far. It's not definitely even something I did a lot on in the previous season before you joined Intop as well. So definitely need to go through a few technique episodes and try and cover some of that stuff. Can be kind of tricky in the audio form, but actually, I mean, just talking it through there, it's still definitely something that can be done quite well, I think. So we'll give it a go and see how it can help.
Absolutely, yeah. I can maybe put some to get some photos out on the trail and put them in the show notes as well.
Aye, for sure.
A bit of visual aid.
Yeah, definitely. Get your GoPro out and start filming yourself.
Oh, and do that. Definitely, yeah.
So he finishes off. This is quite a specific little one, but I think maybe worth having a look at. Said, had a great ride this morning, but it was cold. -9 Fahrenheit to -22 centigrade. I don't know what that means. We're centigrade here. Wait a minute. It was cold. -9 Fahrenheit or 22 centigrade. What? That is Baltic. -22 centigrade, he says. I know some places in the US get proper cold, so maybe it means that. Montana's quite north as well, isn't it? Right in the mountains. So maybe that's true. That is a brave man going out cycling at a -22 weather. But anyway, started to notice his brand new fat bike, some issues with the driveline. Almost looked like his free wheel was going out as his chain would bunch up, and when he would stop pedaling or pedal backwards at all, the chain would basically bunch up. The bike has less than 100 miles on it, so he's thinking it's something to do with frozen components. Maybe we can go into that, but his request is he'd love to hear take on lube. What to look for in a lube for dry winter riding, slushy winter riding, spring raid mud, summer dust, blah, blah, blah. What lube you should be using and when. Do you know, this is something I don't really know much about at all. I've always just bought any old lube, stuck it on. We don't really have to worry about -22 degrees centigrade. We do have a lot of mud, a lot of horrible conditions. So is it something you've looked into a lot? You got any tips on using lube in general?
I would say, generally speaking, I'm in the same kind of camp as you, Colin, in terms of I just kind of get a multi-use lube and just whack that on. But I have used dry and wet lubes kind of in their respective riding conditions. And usually for a dry lube, you kind of want something that's not going to pick up loads of dust and just dusty kind of trail onto the chain. So I think wax lubes are generally, wax-based lubricants are usually used in the drier weather and that sort of, those sort of dusty conditions. And then your wet lube is just something that is fairly, I mean, that some of the wet lube that I've used, there's definitely a difference in terms of quality. Sometimes they just make the chain black and really, really sticky and horrible. And then there's others that are quite a nice sort of light lube. I think some of the WD-40 have actually come out with some specific bike lubricants other than their sort of general spray. And I think they're quite good for some of the wet weather kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, sounds to me like I imagine intuitively that a wax would be good in the cold because it's got to be, I mean, liquid, even oil is going to have a freezing point or something. So if you start at -22, I have no idea what the freezing point of some of the lubes are, but a lot of them are not oil or anything. A lot of them are pretty heavily water-based, aren't they?
Yeah.
So a wax one could be quite good for not freezing in the really harsh cold. And he's talking about dry winter riding as well. So That could be useful.
Yeah.
Maybe this is someone we need to get another expert on then. Maybe a bike maintenance guy, about somebody that knows a lot about how to prep your bike before you go out, in terms of lubing cables, chains, all that kind of stuff. I bet you we could find somebody good for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I think it'd teach both of us a thing or two as well about maintenance and lubricants. Specifically,
in terms of that, you sounded like you made a noise as if you might know what's going on with the whole chain bunching up caper. Was it something that occurred to you, or was it?
I just thought back to a race that I did in Croatia, I think in 2014, and my chain was doing the exact same thing, mm-hmm. And just bunching up when I was freewheeling.
Yeah,
and I remember that being down to a broken pawl in the rear hub. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure how. You know, mechanically that all happens, but that was definitely the symptom, was the chain bunching up even when I was freewheeling. So maybe the kind of grease inside the actual hub has frozen. Like you said, -22, I guess a lot of things are going to be freezing up pretty solid. So maybe it's something to do with the actual kind of free hub body within the rear hub. Would be my sort of uneducated guess.
I suspect at that temperature, just about anything you put on the chain is going to bunch up, make it bunch up too, because I mean it's a pretty common one in Scotland when you're riding through horrible granity mud and wetness and stuff. The chain just gets totally clogged, and so it doesn't flex the way it's meant to, like it doesn't bend the way it's meant to, and that makes it all bunch up horribly when you're try to pedal backwards or even just freewheeling. So I suspect that even a dead clean chain with just a tiny bit of any kind of lube on it is going to do that in horrible temperatures. So difficult one. Maybe we need to get somebody on about that, I think. But it sounds to me like wax could be a good try, at least a wee experiment with using wax rather than any kind of liquid one.
Yeah, that would be intuitively that would kind of make sense, but it'd be interesting to hear how it plays out in practice.
Yeah, cool. Well, we're getting in the winter now, aren't we? Well, not really. August, a couple of months yet, but probably be a few months before you're into those temperatures again, Nolan. But if you do try out any of those things, if you find a solution yourself, then as always, get back to us. Let us know how it went. We'll feedback on the show. And again, if you want to get your voice on, that'd be great. Send in a voice recording. But get in touch either way. Hope that helped anyway. Right, let's go on to the next one. So I also heard from Tatsu Kariyami, who's from Southern California. So probably not the same worries about temperature where Tatsu's from. Much nicer sunny riding down there. And he is saying, so he says, I recently purchased a Giant Talon at 27.5 inch to replace his well-used 5-year-old Specialized Hard Rock Sport. In the 2 months of ownership, he's yet to take his bike on any serious trails, but he's logged about 400 miles on Strava just riding the local trails around Southern California. Cool. And actually, this is more a comment. It was to answer our question on his thoughts about the wheel size. So he says, I am 5'9" and I weigh 140 pounds. Coming from a 26-inch Specialized with a small frame, the 29-inch bikes that he tried, for example, Felt, Giant, Cannondale, they felt too different from what I was used to. I'm sure I would have eventually fallen in love with a 29-inch wheel size, but my current Giant Talon, which is 27.5 inch with a medium frame, seemed like a logical jump for me. I am enjoying the 650B wheel diameter, and handling and riding characteristics are similar to what I was used to prior. That's more just a comment on our episode about wheel sizes. So it's good to get the feedback there. So he's basically saying, the compromise between 26 and 29 suits him quite well. Pretty average height and weight there as well. So maybe that's a good feedback on that.
Yeah, I guess it's again, it does come down to what you're used to, definitely. And the jump from 26 to 27.5 is definitely very linear, and it's a lot less of a shock than to a 29er. especially for someone slightly on the lower side height wise. That's typically why I use 27.5 as well. And I'm about 5'7", so It's a good all round, definitely a good all round wheel size for general trail riding for sure.
I think from what I've heard as well, like the big, we talked about this again on the wheel size episode, but it's the weight difference as well. Like jumping from a 26 inch to a 29 inch, there's a lot more weight going into that.
Mm.
I mean, we're talking grams rather than kilograms, I suppose. But sure. Like you're adding to the frame size, you're adding to the wheel size, the rim, the tire size, all of that stuff. It's not insignificant. So, yeah, I think it could be quite a shock to people that are quite, you know, quite practiced. You know, your local trail, you've spun around it hundreds of times. To suddenly jump up that much in weight might be quite a big quite a big difference.
Yeah, it's rotating weight as well, isn't it? So it's kind of weighted, excuse the pun, a little bit more that way, I guess.
Yeah, so, yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for the feedback, Tatsu. That's really good. If you have any questions for future episodes, as always, get in touch. And again, I keep trying to encourage people to get their voices on here. I'd love to get some more clips on. Tatsu, if you do have any more feedback like that, I'd love to get your voice on. So yeah, send us a voice comment next time around. That'd be excellent. Again, all you have to do is pull out your smartphone, get the voice recorder app and record something there. And you can email it to me at colin@mountainbikespart.com. So last one for this episode, let's go on to Orm. So Orm Arnerson, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Orm Arnerson, it's a bit of a tongue twister, sorry Orm. Orm Arnerson says, "Hi Colin, I'm the kind of guy who probably carries too much stuff with him on most rides. I hate to be the guy who's responsible for spoiling rides for all the group. And most of the time, my buddies are idiots who don't keep their bike in good shape in the first place and keep having technical problems. And of course, they don't have anything of use in their backpack." I think Orm's having some trouble with his bike and buddies there. So this is feedback on the In Your Bag episode.
Yeah.
He says, "All the things you mentioned you'd find in my bag, but what you're missing is a first aid kit. Can be a real lifesaver, pardon the pun."
Of course.
He also carries with him a couple of nuts and bolts in case something gets loose, and on longer tours a Leatherman in addition to the multi-tool. So just echoing what we said a minute ago. So that's a great point on the first aid kit, actually. What are your thoughts on that, Tom? Have you taken out any first aid stuff on rides in the past? Has it made a difference?
I can't say I have, but I'm definitely behind that suggestion. It definitely makes sense for a longer ride or something that's going to be particularly technical or particularly kind of challenging in terms of, even physically, but also kind of technically as well. I could have perhaps done with carrying one on the Costa Blanca bike race, which I did in January this year, which was a 4-day stage race. And some of the trails there were incredibly technical. And that was, the first time that I was kind of coming across them was actually in the race with however many guys kind of, bearing down on you behind. Yeah. So a first aid kit would definitely, that's going on the list, I think, for longer and more technical rides in the future.
I think doing the Mega Avalanche, probably a first aid kit might be necessary.
Sure. Yeah, do you carry one with you, Colin?
For normal rides, no, have to admit, not at all. I'm thinking back to my injury experiences in the past. Like I suppose my thoughts on first aid kits are that there's two ways you can get injured, isn't there? There's like standard, you come off your bike, you're okay generally, but you've got some cuts and scrapes. Mm-hmm. And it probably is a good idea to get a wee alcohol wipe out or something and put a wee dressing on or a plaster or something. Because, we don't tend to worry about stuff like infection or that kind of thing these days, do we? Because you can just pop to the doctor and get antibiotics. But
yeah,
save you a lot of bother if it's something dirty and you can just get out a wee wipe and clean it off.
Yeah, so I think the sooner you can get something on there, the better, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And one of my good riding buddies is a nurse, actually. So he does carry first aid stuff on him, actually, just because he's, I guess, just in his makeup that he has to have that kind of thing, just in case, like, as a medical practitioner, if he was out on a ride and somebody got injured and he didn't have something, he'd be like, mortified. So he does carry some stuff. I think he takes a sort of basic first aid kit. You've got, you've got the sort of plasters, alcohol wipes, a few dressings for bigger things. Yeah. So if you get cut or things like that. What I was thinking was there's two ways. You can either have that kind of thing and you can ride on, you're fine really, but it might be useful, it might help you if you can dress it. The other is the worst case, as in something pretty bad happens, as in you might break something, you're knocked out, you know, something like it's something a bit serious and you can't continue, and you might not even be able to get down the hill. So like the worst I've had is I broke a leg. So I broke my femur once. That wasn't on the trail. I was just on the side of a road, and I was lucky it was a really busy road, so somebody found me pretty quick. But in that kind of instance, and this is something we took on our 4-day ride, which I think I've mentioned in the past, that was the one where we took the derailleur with us. Yeah. On that ride, one of the things that we took, and I think would be good for anyone to take on a longer ride, even an overnighter, is an emergency bag. So like a bivy bag type of thing. Because if you break an arm or a leg or something, and it's something you can't go anywhere. Having like a foil blanket or something to pull over yourself, especially, I mean, talking about, was it Nolan there talking about minus 22 temperatures? I mean, we don't have that here, but like in Scotland, it can get pretty cold overnight. So you're stuck out on a hill overnight. You want to have something with you to keep you warm. So that's something that I would say on top of a first aid bag. If I was doing a long ride, that's something I have taken a few times in the past. I've got a foil blanket that I can just unwrap, weighs next to nothing to put in the bag, and I've got a bivy bag type of thing as well, so that's a bigger plastic, so it's proper, keeps you warm and waterproof. And if you have clothes on inside that thing, you're pretty good overnight. Okay, even in sort of not like bad minus temperatures, but certainly like -5 or whatever, you wouldn't be too bad. So yeah, that's a good idea. Good tip there from Orm, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, the Leatherman as well, backing up our idea there. So
exactly. Cool.
Okay, well, I hope that was useful to everyone. I hope that was useful to you, Orm. Again, any other feedback you have on that, get back to us again, give us some feedback. Anyone else listening, if you're out there, you've had some answers from this, or if it's spurred a few more questions in you, by all means get in touch, let us know. You can get in touch by emailing me, colin@mountainbikesapart.com, or you can tweet us. I'm on Colin MC Gray, and Tom is
by Tom Bell.
Cool. And that's about it for this week. So like I said, we're going to do another Q&A next week to tie up another set of questions, and then that'll finish up the season. So we're nearly finished. Have you enjoyed it, Tom?
Yeah, it's been great. Just covered a lot of ground, and we've already got some kind of exciting ideas for the next season as well. Yeah, so it'd be good to plan that one.
Indeed, cool. Yeah, I know we've had some really good feedback. We're really pleased with what people have been saying about the season. I think it's worked well concentrating on one thing, going through the whole bike back to front, basically. Right, well, let's finish it up there. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for giving us your time, staying with us for this 40-odd minute podcast. Always goes longer than we expect.
It does.
But I hope it was useful. I hope it was worthwhile. And we'll catch you on the next one. Talk to you then.